Webcasting around the world from the desert metropolis of Phoenix, Arizona, this is The Dividing Line. The Apostle Peter commanded Christians to be ready to give a defense for the hope that is within us, yet to give that answer with gentleness and reverence. Our host is Dr. James White, Director of Alpha and Omega Ministries and an elder at the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church. This is a live program, and we invite your participation. If you'd like to talk with Dr. White, call now at 602-973-4602 or toll-free across the United States. It's 1-877-753-3341. And now with today's topic, here is James White.
And welcome to The Dividing Line on a Tuesday. Well, it's sort of afternoon, I guess. Now we had to go a little bit late just to make things work. And in fact, I will be transitioning directly into yet another interview as soon as we're done. In fact, they'll probably be sitting on the phone waiting for me as soon as we get done with the program here on KKRS. No. Yes? No, maybe? Or is that where I was yesterday? let me tell you something. It ain't easy to keep up with all this stuff. Yeah, this says KKRS. Okay. Well, anyways, I thought I'd already been on KKRS. Well, I was on a station in Minneapolis at some point. I don't know. I'm losing track. Anyhow, it was KRKS. How are you supposed to? I mean, KKRS versus KRKS. I mean, how are you supposed to be able to remember that? That is interesting. That was a week ago today. I knew that sounded awful familiar. Anyways, KKRS FM is actually in Washington. So if you're up in the Washington area, then I will be, I think, live on KKRS at 1 o'clock your time today. So we'll see. Anyways, and we'll be talking, of course, about what every Christian needs to know about the Quran. Is it needs to know or should know? It's needs to know. There we go. I just had a look. I've been doing a lot of programs on that book, and that's a good thing. And I'm excited by the very positive response I'm getting from folks, and that's great. By the way, for the sake of full disclosure, I don't know how, for a long time now, I have wanted to make some noise about the fact that quite some time ago, and in fact, do I have up here, let me see here, control T is not doing what control, there it goes. Does it give the date on this? Yeah, January 20th, 2010, so over 3 years ago, we did a debate here on The Dividing Line with Tim Staples. Now, this was at a time period where Tim Staples was talking about how he's doing all these debates, and they were pushing, you know, they continue to push the quote-unquote debate with Jimmy Akin, which was not a debate, and we've said that 147,000 times. And then Tim Staples was talking about how he's going to be doing a lot more debating in the future. I really haven't seen that happen either. But he had debated Steve Gregg, and he debated fell down Dallas too, and he was doing all this stuff, and so we did a debate, 90-minute debate on purgatory. Is purgatory found in 1 Corinthians chapter 3? And I liked the debate because it was focused. You know, sometimes you debate purgatory and it ends up just all over the landscape, and this wasn't. It was focused right on 1 Corinthians chapter 3, one-on-one, absolutely even amount of time. Just great. It was just great. So we had never heard anybody at Catholic Answers ever mention that debate. Not a whisper. And 3 years had passed. And so I asked Hasim, son of Remala, king of graphics, to put together a banner ad for our website. The debate the Catholic Answers doesn't want you to hear. And that started running. I'm not sure when that started running. Just a little while ago. Just a couple weeks ago. Micah is a volunteer, and so he gets to it on a volunteer schedule as best that he can, because he has stuff where he actually gets paid to do things that needs to get done before the stuff where he doesn't get paid to do things, and that's sort of how being a volunteer works. So, anyway, lo and behold, I'm up in Omaha last weekend, And I get a phone call or a text, one of the two, from Rich, who tells me, guess who just called us? I'm like, I don't know. He says, Catholic Answers. They want the recordings of the Staples debate. Now, let me tell you something. When Tim Staples did that debate, there is zero question that he was fully well aware of the fact that part of the agreement up front was we will provide you with the recording from right here. You all can make it available. We wanted them to make it available. And now we're hearing that, well, actually, you know, we didn't know about it until you all put that up. We didn't even know about it. So you're telling me that Tim Staples didn't tell you about it? Seriously? He didn't tell you were going to be doing that? So you guys can do debates, and Tim Staples can do debates, and Carl Keating won't know anything about it? Really? I have a hard time believing that. It seems a little bit strange to me. I'm very certain that Catholic Answers was fully aware of the existence of it, and it was only the fact that we made it available, and not only made it available, but then put this out and said, you know, they never talk about this. They talk about Tim Staples' debates with all these other folks, but they never talk about this one. They have never even acknowledged its existence. So let's call it the debate that Catholic Answers doesn't want you to hear. And now folks will get to hear it. And I'm glad. I am so glad. The inimitable TQuid / James Swan, who evidently is clearly a compromiser. He's clearly a compromiser because he has not been banned from the Catholic Answers forums. All he gets are dings and demerits and stuff like that. Maybe they just figure he's so busy dealing with, Luther stuff that he's not scary or something like that. But he sent me. Now I'm not sure if this is an email that was sent out. No, this is not an email. These are comments. Maybe it's something from the face. This looks like something from a Facebook page. So yeah, it's definitely something from a Facebook page. And so I'm looking at some of the comments here and people going back and forth and there's people. Those, it's so silly how people come to this page and rant about how weak the Catholic position is. It isn't. A&O said all sorts of things, guys, and just because they call it the debate they don't want you to hear, it doesn't make it so. It's simply an ad hominem. Really? That's ad hominem. Interesting. Philip Regal is the one who said that. And then we have this brilliant Matt West. Thank you, Matt West. Here once again. The caliber of the Catholic Answers Forum people. Who cares what A&O says? Perhaps James White should debate his sister. There you go, Matt. Stepping up to the plate. Wing, and he misses. Good job, Matt. Good job. So anyways, I'm just thankful that that folks at Catholic Answers in their audience will have the opportunity of coming to discover that 1 Corinthians chapter 3 doesn't really teach what they thought it did. And I think that's the result of that particular that particular encounter. So I'm glad that they have the opportunity of doing that. But what I've asked, the whole reason I mentioned this, is I have asked Hasim, son of Remala, king of graphics, to not pull the banner ad, but to change the banner ad to something like the debate that we had to force Catholic Answers to get you to listen to, or something like that. Because there is no question. There is no question that the reason they contacted us is because we put that banner ad up and said, okay, all right, 3 years worth of sweeping this baby under the rug, fine. And I wrote to Tim after that. I haven't looked up my emails, but I wrote to him after that debate and said, no, let's do some more, you know. And in fact, I'm pretty certain I wrote to him and said, and I'll be happy to do more debates like this on Catholic Answers Live if you all just let us have the recordings too. And I haven't been invited on to Catholic Answers Live. I don't know why. I'll bet you they'll invite Tequid, because then they're not scared of Tequid because he talks about Luther all the time. He's pulling his hair out there. Going, what do you mean? You're being mean to me. I'm sorry. I don't mean to. I didn't want to do that. Anyways, I've got lots to get to. Let me just get to one thing before we get to any phone calls. I don't know when I grabbed this. It's only been viewed 166 times. so it's one of the big YouTube videos out there. By the way, I found out yesterday that GodTube is back. Now, some of you are not old enough to remember GodTube. But back right... When did I first start... Forgot which year it was. I started doing videos and stuff like that, putting them on YouTube. And there was something called GodTube. And I posted a bunch of stuff to GodTube. I had an account like that. And then one day, they all just disappeared. They just poof, gone. No explanation. No nothing. So I write to them, we're sorry. You can upload them again. And I'm like, what? And so... what I heard later was that they had been taken over by Roman Catholics, and that would explain why my account went poof, disappeared. but they're back. I was interviewed yesterday, had a Skype interview yesterday, and I just figured they wanted to use Skype because Skype has a much higher quality sound, you know, stuff like that. So I'm sitting here, right where I am right now. Skype, for some reason, is broken on my nice new year old MacBook Pro, but it works on the two MacBook Pros in here, the old ones. So obviously there's been some kind of update. Somebody broke something that uses a common library file or something, and I haven't had time to try to troubleshoot this thing, because you go online and you find this stuff, and then you try to find the file. They say you need to delete to do a new install, and it's not where... it's not on your system where it was on their system, and blah. So if anybody knows why both Google Earth and Skype is broken for Mac at the moment, please let me know. I would like to get both those programs working again as soon as is humanly possible. I use them both extensively. Anyways, so I'm sitting here because it's the only place I've got Skype working. And so they come on, and the video comes up. And so I turn my little video thing on. This is a video interview. So here I'm sitting here. You know, I didn't dress nicely or anything. I mean, I was dressed nicer, thankfully, than I am now. But I'm like, oh, really? It's video. I didn't know that. Could possibly, you know. So I would much rather have done that in my office, but I couldn't because these Macs aren't in my office. And so there you go. So. Those videos I will be posting the links to once they're sent to me. I'll tweet them and do stuff like that. But please realize I had no earthly idea it was going to be a video interview. So it's sort of like, nice background there. Wow, that's great. Thank you. Anyhow, why was I talking about? Oh, yes, GodTube. The folks that did the interview, Christianity.com, they own GodTube now. It's now owned by Salem, the radio network. So I'm like, oh, really? Because I'll be perfectly honest with you. I'll be honest with you. There are certain videos that I want to do that I have to sit back and go, if I do this, 580 videos could disappear from my YouTube channel in a moment. Because I still want to get around to responding. I haven't had a chance to. Got back from Omaha. I have not had the time to be able to do the videos I want to do in response to that open letter to the church. And now, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to put it on GodTube, because they're not going to kick me off of that, and I can embed it, and it'll, so that's what I'm going to do. So I'm going to set up an account with GodTube, and I have the inside track, I think, to make sure I can post however long I want on that for now, and we'll go from there. So GodTube is back. And hopefully very useful. I haven't had a chance to get on it to start setting stuff up yet, but we will. Anyhow, this is over on YouTube, where I have 580-some-odd videos. And a Muslim explains why Protestants are returning to the Catholic Church. Now, here's how's this for transition? We'll start off talking a little bit about Catholic answers. And so now, let's have a Muslim explain why Protestants are returning to the Catholic Church. And what also made this interesting was this is Hamza Tsartsis. And he was the guy that was supposed to be on Unbelievable with me and this other Muslim the last time I was in London. I think it was the last time I was in London. And got caught in traffic and then just never showed up. And so we sat around, thought he was close, then never showed up and didn't let us know he wasn't going to show up. So we got real late start. And so it was really weird. So we didn't get a chance to meet. So it's only 1:07 long, and I hope it works. here's a Muslim explaining why Protestants are returning to the Catholic Church. I just found it interesting. Let's see if we can hear it. Oh, it's supposed to be working. Is it not up?
Open-ended verses and biblical verses are specified. So
let me roll that back there.
Is
it my fault? I just wanted to mention that.
The point of interpretation, for example, the Quran, for example, if we read the whole of the Quran holistically, we understand that it's probably the only religious book that gives you tools of interpretation.
Now, the Quran gives you tools of interpretation. One of my criticisms of the Quran is its dependence historically and just contextually upon much later sources for interpretation. There are entire sections of the Quran that you simply cannot know what its background is, even now. There are sections of the Quran where there's a dispute as to what its background is because the Hadith says different things. And then there are sections of the Quran where it's agreed that the Hadith is right on what the background is, but the only reason you know that is because the Hadith says so. So you have a text that is dependent upon materials gathered for hundreds of years afterwards for its interpretation. And in almost all these interviews I've been doing, one of the things I point out is the vast difference between how we approach the New Testament text and how Muslims approach the text of the Quran. So I found it very interesting that Hamza would make this kind of a statement.
For example, the Quran says there are some open-ended verses, ambiguous verses, and they're specified. So in linguistics, it's called intra and intertextuality. Now,
intertextuality is a big area of study right now. For example, Dr. Gagnon, in his presentation of Paul's words in Romans chapter 1 regarding homosexuality, will raise the issue of intertextuality. That is, clearly, the presentation in Romans 1 is drawing directly from the Genesis creation account. The language is the same. The parallels are the same. This is intertextuality, relationship between two books. And there's all sorts of intertextuality between Old and New Testament. Obviously, we know that. One of my biggest points and arguments is that there is no intertextuality between the alleged previous revelations of Allah in the Torah and the Injil and the Quran. The author of the Quran does not engage in intertextuality because he does not know the other text. He knows the Old Testament better than the New Testament as far as stories go. But as far as actual direct knowledge of those texts, just not there. It's just not there. So I find this very, very interesting.
For it creates a scope of interpretation. Yes, I agree, there's interpretation. But there are some things that lie outside of the scope because you don't know the language, you don't know the interpretive tools, you don't follow the scholarly tradition, etc. So there is, yes, I agree, a scope of interpretation, but it's fixed. So that, in essence...
Well, it's fixed, but what does that mean? I mean, assuming that Hamza is Sunni, it may be fixed for him in regards to his particular school of interpretation jurisprudence. But that's the parallel here, ironically, is, in my mind, looking at it from a church history perspective, it's like the scholastic period during the medieval years, prior to the Renaissance and Reformation, where you have patristic interpretation that has then been interpreted by certain scholars, and unfortunately, even a lot of the sources they used weren't real. I mean, we know that that's the case in regards to a lot of the papal texts and things like that. They made up statements from the early church fathers and things like that that actually didn't exist, and so on and so forth. The pseudo-Isidorian decretals and all that kind of stuff. The donation of Constantine, la, la, la. So you've got that stuff going on. But you have this fixed interpretation that really is not based upon, in any way, the actual exegesis of the text of the Bible. And that's the same thing you have with the Quran. I mean, if you get some later interpretation based upon hadith sources, things like that, that's not the same thing as saying, okay, here is the original language, here is the original context, this is what the author meant in the original context, things like that. Sometimes you just can't do that. And so the parallel here is between Sunni Islam and Roman Catholicism. And the Protestant would be the one saying, no, you have to, the authority of the scripture is greater than these later interpretive sources. And of course, from my perspective, I would look at the Sunni Muslim and say, have you ever thought about the fact that that's where your parallel is, and that in many, in an epistemological sense, if you're saying the Quran is the ultimate authority, but in essence the Quran is not interpretable outside of these later non-inspired sources, that creates a fundamental difficulty? I really think it does.
The red herring. The point I want to get to.
What's different about that than, say, Christian theology, theological's different interpretation of the Bible?
Well, that's very interesting. Right? Well, for example, in the Protestant tradition, the reason they moved away from the Catholic Church is because they said, look, it's me and my book. And
no. No, Hamza, that is a horrific, horrific misrepresentation. Wow, the views went up since I started talking about it. I think a few people have found it. Hey, 100, now up to 172 views, and it may keep going up. Folks are looking for it. Well, since I'm talking about it, I'm going to help it. Anyways, that is a horrific misrepresentation. That is a caricaturization, and a poor one at that. Me and my Bible under the tree. Ugh. How many times have we addressed that? How many times have we corrected that misapprehension of the entire concept of the Reformation? It was not me and my Bible under a tree. And that, some people have called that solo scriptura instead of sola scriptura. But that's just an error.
Interpret the way I want. But now a lot of Protestants are coming back to the Catholic tradition because they're saying, how do I understand God's word? And that's why they see the church entity as an interpretive authority, you see. So obviously they have their own confusions, but the book doesn't tell it how to interpret it. That's why you have the German School of Systematic Theology.
And unfortunately it stopped there. The rest of it would have been interesting to listen to, but that is not the case. At least he's touching a little bit on something that I thought was least useful that we could point out the contrast to, but that is not the Protestant understanding of sola scriptura. And the scriptures do provide a mechanism of interpretation because you take all of it together. I was listening to my debate. I rarely do this, but I was listening to my debate today I listened to both the Barry Lynn debate and the John Shelby Spong debates on homosexuality, obviously, because I have a debate this Thursday on the subject, so I thought, you know, let's go back and listen to those. It's been a long time. And I listened this morning to the Spong debate, and I was tempted to play portions of it, but I probably won't. But let me tell you something. I just, it was a good debate. It was a good debate only in the sense that the massive contrast between having a Christian worldview and a non-Christian worldview. I mean, you know, what Machen said about liberalism being a completely different religion was exactly right. Was exactly right. And we saw it big time in that. It is amazing. I have no idea what that in the studio chat thing means, but I'm going to skip over that. Let's get to some phone calls here, and let's go up to Indianapolis. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm another one of those reformed moms, and I just wanted to thank you for your program and for my husband, too.
Thank you.
My question today is not on the topic, I'm sorry.
Isn't any one particular topic, so that's okay.
Okay. The Godmakers movie is still making its circulation, and I think you had made reference sometime that it had some inaccuracies or something, and mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that.
Well, there are a couple of them. I'm not sure how many. I know there's at least two. There may have been a third. I've forgotten. The first Godmakers movie wasn't all that bad. It had some good people in it. Sandra Tanner was in it, and so there were some good folks. But then the second one started getting a little goofy, and I think the second one is the one that has the cartoon presentation of Mormon theology with Elohim and Jesus and Joseph Smith up on the judges thing and a few things like that. So, you know, I'll be honest with you, it's been a very, very long time, and my recollection was that the first one was defensible, though not necessarily real as balanced as it would be nice. And the second one went off into some strange weirdness that was not defensible. And I think, if I recall correctly, and I'd have to look, on our website in the old files section, which someday, I mean, I know all these files have been converted to new formats and all the rest of this stuff. I just don't know when it's ever going to see the light of day. But I know that Rich is actually on the phone with people about that right now. So maybe sometime in 2013. But you can still at least search stuff. I think, if I recall correctly, in the LDS section, and I'm not going to look there right now because multitasking is fun, but not necessarily all that fun. In the LDS section, there is a discussion of, I think I wrote to some of the people that were involved with that particular, the second one especially, and, you know, tried to provide some correctives or things like that. Maybe that's still there. I'm really not sure if it is or not, but I know that I did at one point, and this was many, many moons ago, tried to provide some type of a corrective to some of the things that Godmakers 2 specifically said. So, boy, the original one, boy, that would really be old now. I mean, that came out like 1984, maybe? Coming up on 30 years, maybe? Somewhere around there?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, something like that. So, you know, the original one was pretty good, but then the second one got a little weird. And then, you know, there was a third one, and it got even weirder, as I recall. So I'm not sure which one you're referring to.
See, I don't know. So is there, like, a different video you'd recommend, or?
Well, yeah, you know, the Institute for Religious Research, IRR.org, I think, has been cranking out some great stuff. I'll be honest with you, I've fallen behind on keeping up with what's new in the Christian area in response to Mormonism. But I know that they put out a video on the issue of genetics and the Book of Mormon. And still the book, by his own hand upon papyrus, is the best book I know of on the Book of Abraham and stuff like that. So those folks are really good in their research and stuff. So IRR.org would probably be where I'd want to go with that. And, of course, you know, we've done the debates. My understanding is there was a debate recently in Salt Lake City, and with Jason, the same pastor who arranged my debates up there, and I guess he debated Martin Tanner again. I debated Martin Tanner years ago, and we have that available, and I'm not sure if it's on YouTube or not, but I know we have it available. And we did a number of debates up there in Salt Lake. So some of those were video recorded. some of them are Make Me Famous, like the one with what was the guy's name that wrote the response to the Godmakers that I debated up there, little old man that I debated. Remember? Hopkins? No, it wasn't Hopkins. I don't think it was Hopkins. Yeah, Gilbert Sharse, Dr. Gilbert Sharse. That's who it was. Thank you. yes, the little old man that Jason was so concerned I was going to kill during the course of the debate. Just, he was going to keel over and die during the debate. And please be nice. Let him go over time. Don't say anything really harsh, you know, because, I mean, we were just really concerned. Because he gets there, and, you know, his opening statement starts off with, "I don't know why I'm here." it was interesting, but not really your most compelling debate. But so we got a bunch of those available too. So anyway.
Okay, thank you.
All righty, thanks for calling. Uh-huh. All right, God bless. Bye bye. I probably talked too much there, but I just was yammering on. I'm not really sure what IRR.org has available these days, but I don't they have a video on the Book of Abraham? I don't know. I haven't kept up. I'm sorry. I apologize. I should have. But anyways. All right. 877-753-3341 is the phone number. We're getting some phone calls, and I suppose that's a good thing here halfway through the program. But let's talk with Robert in a place that shall not be named, possibly for his safety. Hi, Robert.
Hey, it's Dr. White. How are you doing?
Doing good.
You don't want to mess in San Francisco?
I don't know, man. I didn't want the folks to triangulate on you, find you, and do anything bad, you know. Lock you up, kick you out, you know. it's just San Francisco, man.
That's right. Anyway,
it's very expensive there, too, by the way. I just thought I'd let you know.
Yeah, it is.
You know, you go through a drive-thru, and it costs you, you know, $15. You're the only person.
That is a possibility.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yep. Anyways, that wasn't what you were calling about. Please go ahead.
All right. I wrote or typed down my question ahead of time just so I wouldn't, like, lose track of my thought. It has to do with the extent of mercy versus the extent of justice. So let me just read what I typed.
Okay.
Does God need to show the same amount of mercy to everyone in order to be merciful? His justice, on the other hand, is laid on both the criminal and on the substitute. So full justice is always met out. But, you know, the unearned, undeserved mercy, on the other hand, doesn't seem to be as equally distributed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, because, of course, this is one of the problems with those who promote the concept of equal ultimacy, that God's salvific work is just the equal sign, just the opposite end of the same issue of reprobation or passing over someone or anything else. That's not the case. What God does in saving someone is an incredible extension of grace and mercy, et cetera, whereas the justice is the necessary a corollary of God being holy and the creator of all things. And so mercy and grace are completely different categories than justice. So when God in mercy and grace transcends those categories, if he did that with only one person, that would be grace undeserved. The fact that he does it with a number that he describes as the sand of the sea is only further demonstration of his true nature as loving and merciful and gracious. But that is an extension of divine power, and it transcends the categories of justice. So justice has to be done, which is why the cross is necessary, et cetera, because of the nature of God. But mercy, grace, and love are things that God freely expresses. He desires to express because he desires to express the fullness of his character. And in so doing, brings about salvation, but it is freely done. And there is no compulsion laid upon God in the way that he is created that would force him to basically have no freedom. Because, again, you can either, when you think about it logically, either God can save everyone or God can save no one. But in neither of those situations is there any freedom on the part of God. God does not get to demonstrate anything about himself if he saves every single person. And he doesn't demonstrate anything about himself if he doesn't save any person at all. There's no freedom for God to act in either of those situations. Only when you have the demonstration of God's justice and the demonstration of God's mercy and grace, in other words, when he is free to save whom he will in the way he chooses to save them, only in that situation do you really have freedom for God. And so I'm not sure if that answered your question, but I heard some echo of the possibility of equal ultimacy there in the idea that as much, quote, and it almost sounds like we're quantifying things, but as much mercy needs to be demonstrated as the amount of justice or something like that, like it's a 50-50 thing. And
yeah, so the answer would be no, and it's because of God's freedom?
Yes. Yes, I mean... Okay. Let's think of this in a time frame concept. Up till the cross, to whom had God showed mercy in extending a covenant relationship with himself relative to the total number of human beings on the planet? A pretty
Correct.
Small group.
Yeah.
Pretty small group. If you take that as your sample. Now the gospel has gone to the whole world. And if you're a good postmillennialist, you might actually hold out hope that eventually there will be a majority. If you're postmillennialist, if you're more of an amillennialist like some people might be who are on the program right now, then you're not so sure about all those things. But the point is that when you try to quantify things, it sort of depends on when you're talking about, where you're talking about, stuff like that.
Okay.
All right.
So I think that 99% answers my question.
Well, so, we shoot for a minimum of 95, so that's pretty good.
Okay.
And the government requires only a minimum of 80% of the answer to be given, so that it would be really right past their daily requirement standards right there.
Okay. So one more quick statement.
Sure.
So in terms of actually holding an attribute, so God doesn't need to be as merciful, let's see. So,
if God is merciful, that does not require him to become a universalist.
Okay.
Otherwise, you are saying that one attribute can override and, in essence, diminish or get rid of another attribute, and God cannot freely act. So, for example, I love my wife. But I'm not supposed to love anybody else's wife. So being loving does not necessarily mean that there are not parameters of freedom that I then have to exercise in regards to my loving. So I am to love all men, but if someone is breaking into my home to attack my wife, I am not to be paralyzed by the silly idea that, oh, I love my wife, oh, I love this man, oh, I don't know what to do because I love them both. No, I am to protect my wife, and that's my duty. That's what I'm supposed to do. So since we are made in the image of God, then we have that ability to love in a particular way and to love with freedom. So that's what God does too.
Okay.
All right.
I'll listen to this again on the podcast. Maybe it'll jack up from 99 to 100%.
There you go. All right, you be careful out there in San Francisco. We don't want you all of a sudden just disappear or, you know, get run out of town or something.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
877. I'm really not actually overly concerned about that happening. I don't want anybody to really think that I really. But have you seen some of the stuff that happens in San Francisco? It is a little bit scary. There really, really, really is. So anyhow, let me bring up a text here. And of course, I'm hoping at this particular point in time that the call screener gets the text right. There's a couple times when people who will not be mentioned have got the wrong text there, and then I'm wondering why the person's asking the question that they're asking. But having put that up, let's talk to Rick in a city that I drove to twice this past weekend and ended up in a massive traffic jam trying to get out of on Saturday. I hope you weren't stuck in that, Rick.
Oh no, I was safe at home.
You were safe at home.
I did notice the bike path that you took up Mount Lemmon. That's pretty impressive.
Oh yeah, all the way to the U of A Sky Center. And have you ever been up there?
Oh yeah, beautiful.
It's beautiful up there. Have you ever ridden a bike up there?
I know. I think I could probably maybe get
to Windy Point?
Three quarters of a mile on a bike in my current shape.
So I'm not gonna have to worry about competing against you when I ride an El Tour de Tucson in November.
No, not in the least.
No, okay.
Not in the least.
Will you be sitting there at one of the long stoplights going, "Oh, I forgot that was today. Oh no."
Probably. Yeah. Well, I'd say if you ever really want to feel good about yourself, you can play a game of golf with me. You
know? Oh no. Have you ever seen me play golf? Well, let me tell you something.
I know how bad I am.
Oh, trust me. If you've played more than 18 holes, you're better than me. Trust me. I do not have my Baptist golf card type thing. I am really, really bad at that. Anyways, what can we do for you, Rick?
A couple of questions. There's a couple of texts that I wanted to ask you about, just because I've heard a lot of people bring them up, and I could probably respond to them, but I haven't. They're not texts that I have just, you know, come to in my normal reading yet and tried to really work through. So sometimes even the best of us get caught off guard every now and then. But
right.
Like, for instance, someone who is a very, very, not just a rabid anti-Calvinist, but also a very big King James onlyist. There's
really?
plenty of them on YouTube.
Oh, yes, there are.
Oh, yeah. So just for that, I'll read it out of the New International Version. But, the text like Hosea 8:4, where it says, "They set up kings without my consent. They chose princes without my approval. With their silver and their gold, they make idols for themselves to their own destruction."
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, or Jeremiah 32:35, where it, and notice these are just one verse quotations, but
right.
"They built high places for Baal in the valley of Ben Hinnom to sacrifice their sons and daughters to Molech, though I had never commanded it, nor did it enter into my mind." I think you've dealt with that one before.
Yeah, it's come up with Michael Brown, actually.
Yeah, you know, so just, you don't have to go, because I have just a couple more questions after that, but what's like a basic way you would begin to address those two texts,
sure,
or
sure.
texts like that?
Right. Yeah, well, I guess I would have to ask, and I have asked. In fact, I got into trouble for asking this question. Little backstory here. If you've ever heard the 3-hour debate from the Bible Answer Man broadcast in 2003 with George Bryson, at one point Hank got pretty
read my book.
At one point Hank got pretty upset with me. That was the read my book debate. Yeah. At one point.
Yeah, I actually did.
Yeah.
I actually did listen to that, but I did. It's been a while now, though.
Yeah, well, at one point, I asked George whether he was an open theist. And Hank got really upset with me for asking if he was an open theist. But I had to, because mm-hmm. if their understanding is, okay, nor had it entered my mind, do they understand that, as open theists do, that the first time that some high priest made child sacrifice in the valley of Ben Hinnom to Moloch, God went, "Oh my goodness, I cannot believe that that just was." He up in heaven going, "Ah, I didn't see this coming." Because, I mean, from an open theistic perspective, that's what you'd have to say. And when Hosea says they set up princes, but I knew it not. Did God get up in the morning and go, wait a minute, how did that guy become a prince? I didn't see that coming at all. I have to ask the question, because there are people who will actually say, yes, God had no earthly idea that this was going to happen. He created this whole universe. He knew it was a potentiality, but he did not know it in reality until it actually happened, and so on and so forth. And you ask that question, people get really, really upset with you. And so if I'm talking to someone who believes that God does at least have exhaustive divine foreknowledge, at least knows what the future contains, then I have to go, okay, if that's the case, then what are you thinking these texts mean? Because when God created the heavens and the earth, what you're telling me is he knew when he created the valley of Ben-Hinnom what was going to happen when Moloch worship came to Israel. Now, you may say he didn't decree it, okay, but he knew it was going to happen, and he created the potentiality for it, and the problem is now you're telling me he didn't actually have a purpose for it, though he knew it was going to happen. And it was just the best he could do. I mean, what, are you a Molinist? You know, are you saying that this was the best of all possible worlds? I don't know. And the same way, they made kings, but not through me. They set up princes, but I knew it not. The silver and gold, they made idols for their own destruction. Are you saying that God knew it was going to happen, but the only way to actually make a king was through him, or asking him to assign the, you know, I need to get a positive exegetical statement from them to be able to interact with it. Once
you've, you know, in my experience, which is limited, every person who puts up a video on this or tries to interact with these, that's exactly what they don't do.
Well, that's the
all
problem.
They do, all they do is say, well, this is what it doesn't mean.
Right.
And so my conversation with one particular gentleman, I don't want to say degenerated, but it completely, in my opinion, went somewhere where I think he probably wasn't intending to go, and I didn't mind it, but it went to the point where, well, can God have a secret decree and a command at the same time? Well, and then they would say no. I'm like, okay, so you're telling me that God cannot cannot decree something before the foundation of the world that he does not like. And then, no, I'm like, what about the death of Christ?
Right.
That seems pretty clear that was pretty, and then immediately you never get any more responses after that.
Well, and that's the problem. And let's be honest, you know, especially in a place like YouTube, that's why I do not have content or comments on any of my YouTube videos, because of the fact that YouTube is the internet ignorance aggregator, and you're not going to get that kind of interaction. And generally, having a discussion like this is better to do so in the context of someone who actually will interact with you. Once they have given you a meaningful interpretation, then you've got a basis of saying, okay, I would understand Hosea 8 to be saying that these individuals acted in rebellion against God. And so when it says they made kings, but not through me, that they were setting up other sources of authority outside of God. They set up princes, but I knew it not, is not a statement of ignorance on God's part. You have to remember something, especially, you know, I think hopefully this is helpful to people. If you look at Hosea 8 in an English translation of the Bible, you will notice that it is poetic in form. And in the Hebrew language, you have something called Hebrew parallelism. And so the Hebrew parallel between, you see, it says, they made kings, but not through me. They set up princes, but I knew it not. So the parallel to I knew it not is, but not through me. The parallel between they made kings is they set up princes. And so it's restating the concept. And the concept is not that, wow, I had no idea this is going on. The point is that they're doing it outside of God, in opposition to God, in rebellion to God. It's not that God doesn't have knowledge of what they're doing, because that's stated over and over and over again. God looks down from the heavens, observes all the actions of man. That's not what it's talking about. Yada is the term yada, to know there, is the same term when Adam yadad Eve, she had a child. The men who gathered outside of Lot's house wanted to yadah the men who were in Lot's house. When God says, you only, to Israel, of all the nations of the earth, have I yadahed. So obviously, yadah has a much wider spectrum of meaning in the original language than is normally understood by people at that particular point in time. And
that fits in perfectly with the next what I was going to ask you after that was there's a gentleman on YouTube I think he teaches at Dallas Theological Seminary. His name is Dr. Jerry Walls.
Yes, uh-huh.
Have you ever interacted with him or?
Well, yeah. I mean, years ago, when he and his co-author of Why I'm Not a Calvinist debated at Southern Seminary, I played. Yeah, there's the debates on there, and everybody sent me his Why I'm Not a Calvinist thing, and I suppose I'll need to get to it eventually. But I'll be perfectly honest with you. Philosophical Arminianism.
That's what I was going to say.
Is boring.
He seemed like he was pretty, at least on the video. He's got three videos up called What's Wrong with Calvinism.
Yeah.
I really don't appreciate the name. But he seems to be a little bit more even-keeled in those videos. He doesn't seem to be like some of the other people. He seems to be very much at least having the appearance of wanting to, you know, be civil and not just, you know, calling Calvinists devils or anything like I've heard
right.
so many other times.
Right.
He seems like he's a little bit more wanting to get at the point, but, you know, when some of the points that he brings up, I kind of have to think, I mean, I have no formal training in this, and I can even spot a few things that I don't think that he's very consistent with.
Yeah, well, this is the problem. Once you get into philosophical Arminianism, you're dealing with people who primarily are saying, well, you know, I start here. These are my philosophical issues, and I'm a biblical Calvinist. I start with divine revelation, and then we can talk about the philosophy later. But obviously, I believe the divine revelation determines what we should, you know, come to conclusions in that other area, and that's where there's such a massive difference. And that's the problem is that most of the folks you're talking to are not philosophical Arminians. They're traditional Arminians. And they actually do believe that what they believe is what the Bible teaches. Most philosophical Arminians are also rather liberal in their view of Scripture. And once you start pushing, then you discover that that's the case, that they are rather liberal in their view of Scripture. I don't know where Jerry Walls comes down on certain issues regarding inerrancy and stuff like that.
He seems to approach everything in those videos pretty much, if I could describe it, it would seem like he seems to approach everything textually from the standpoint of, I don't want to misrepresent the guy because I don't know if this is the case, but it sounds to me like when he talks as though he sets up rationalism and logic and just philosophy. I'll put the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Emphasis on the wrong syllable, yeah.
But it seems like he sets those up as the ultimate authority, and he basically views Scripture through those lenses.
Well, that's the point.
Okay.
That's the point of philosophical Arminianism is it's not really determined by exegesis and things like that. And if anybody wants to see what that results in, just go back and watch the video of my debate with John Sanders on the subject of inclusivism. And where I attempted to say, well, let's take a look at what Jesus said in John chapter 6. And I don't know how many times I said it. I mean, I had it in my opening statement, stuff like that. Finally, during the cross-examination, it was like, okay, we really need to talk about this. And so finally, you sort of watch him, and he sort of opens his Bible and says, well, okay, you know, it's been a number of years since I've looked at this text. And you've got your Calvinist interpretation and Arminian interpretation. I don't think we're going to get anywhere here, but okay. You know, and that's just the difference between approaching this from a philosophical perspective and approaching it from a biblical perspective. That's why I would have to have time and inclination to fight through all of that to respond to that, and that's just not normally what most folks are dealing with. That's one of the reasons I haven't really gone there with it.
that makes more sense to me now why you probably wouldn't spend a lot of time dealing with that, because in light of your saying you want them to positively affirm, what does the scripture say as far as you're concerned?
Right.
Because most of them don't even get into that. The last thing I was going to ask you, I've been forgot to call in so many times. I've been dying to ask you this. The Theology Matters show that you do on, do you still do that on Monday?
Uh-huh.
Do you have a podcast or anything for people who actually don't get to listen to that when it runs on Monday?
No, I really don't. It's a program that I do all by myself. I have no help whatsoever doing it. At first, you know, Chris Arnson arranged it, and it was sort of like, you know, could you do this? And it's only once a week. And so what I do, vast majority of the time, is I'm taking a presentation that I have done, and I have to edit it to fit 22 minutes and 30 seconds. And so if you follow my sermons on Sermon Audio at PRBC, and if you sort of follow the stuff that I post on the blog every once in a while, for example, what's airing on Theology Matters in New York right now is the parts, the next 2 weeks will be my presentation from Hawaii that I did tweet or Facebook or something on whether there's on Galatians chapter 1.
Okay.
So most, 95% of the time, what's on Theology Matters is something that I've done someplace else. It's very rarely that I actually sit down and do something completely, fresh just for that. It's because it's just, it's difficult to do. So no.
I was worried I was missing a lot.
Nope, you're not. You're good. I don't know how I would do it anyways, to be perfectly honest with you. So anyways. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Rick, and I'll see you in El Turo, Tucson.
you might see me on the sidelines, nursing the kid, just holding the baby up and say, yeah,
there you go.
Look, there's a guy who can, out support your dad who's 20 years his senior.
There you go. All righty.
Talk to you later.
Thanks, Rick. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Some good phone calls today, and that takes us right up to the end of the program. LaShawn Barber is in channel. Hello, LaShawn. Nice to see you there. I haven't had a chance to. Are we set up for what we got going on? I haven't called yet. Well, I know, but once they do, we'll be ready to go right to KKRS. So if you're listening live right now, you can Google KKRS. I'm assuming I'm going to be live, and I don't know whether they have a live stream or not. Most radio stations anymore do have a live stream. So KKRS is the number, I believe it's up in Washington State, and I supposedly will be on, if things are normal and it is live, and it's not just an interview, recorded interview, probably at 5 or 6 after the hour, because they always have the news break. It used to be 4.5 minutes, because I was on radio, and I knew those things. But anyhow, we will see. So look them up, and we'll see how that goes. Will not be here on Thursday because, of course, I will be, Lord willing, debating Justin Lee up in Helena, Montana. Justin Lee, the head of the Gay Christian Network, would appreciate your prayers for that. And then for Reformation Montana on Friday and Saturday, Lord willing, regular schedule the week after that. Heading into June, there's going to be at least one section there where I'm gone for a long time teaching in Berlin. Wir fahren nach Berlin, ja, aber ausgezeichnet ist. Okay, no tongues speaking on the program aloud. We'll see you next week. God bless.
I believe we're standing at the crossroads. Let this moment slip away. We must contend for the faith of fathers far more. We need a new Reformation Day.
Dividing Line has been brought to you by Alpha and Omega Ministries. If you'd like to contact us, call us at 602-973-4602 or write us at P.O. Box 37106, Phoenix, Arizona 85069. You can also find us on the World Wide Web at aomin.org. That's aomin.org, where you'll find a complete listing of James White's books, tapes, debates, and tracks. Join us again this Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. for The Dividing Line.